In the matter of State versus Juan Cruz Peña, can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General Valeria Dominguez on behalf of the state.
And Marsha Bloom, Assistant Deputy Public Defender for Juan Cruz Peña.
Welcome, counsel. Ms. Dominguez, please.
Thank you. I would like to respectfully request 2 minutes for a rebuttal if necessary.
That's fine.
Thank you. May it please the court. During the early morning hours of May 22, 2014, CM joined defendant and others on a porch of an abandoned house in Patterson. When CM sought to leave shortly thereafter, defendant confined her to the porch and told her she would pay for money her friend had taken from defendant. During the hours-long confinement that ensued, defendant repeatedly penetrated CM orally, vaginally, and anally. At one point, even directed his friend to penetrate her as well, in addition to physically assaulting and verbally threatening her. In ruling that the state could not have charged defendant with kidnapping based on CM's prolonged confinement, thereby vacating the state's kidnapping conviction, the appellate division set troubling precedent that should be reversed. Despite the prolonged confinement, the appellate division found that the confinement was merely incidental to the underlying, to what it wrongly characterized as a 4 to 5 hour continuous sexual assault. In so doing, the court found that the risk of harm the victim faced during the confinement was not independent of the danger posed by the sexual assault, and that no additional force was used absent that needed to commit the sexual abuse. But this holding failed to give the state the benefit of all favorable testimony and favorable reasonable inferences drawn from that testimony, and ignore the fact that a sexual assault can be committed in a matter of minutes without striking the victim in the face, without forcibly taking the victim's money, without threatening future assaults, and without commanding a cohort to penetrate the victim as well. Here, had defendant not confined CM for a substantial period, she would not have been subjected to repeated sexual assaults as well as physical assaults and threatened with future harm. The panel's misinterpretation and misapplication of the case law regarding what constitutes a confinement for a substantial period under the kidnapping statute warrants reversal and reinstatement of defendant's kidnapping conviction for 3 primary reasons. First, defendant's confinement of CM was not merely incidental to the underlying sexual assault. In fact, here, defendant's confinement of CM was substantially criminally significant. The confinement of CM to the porch, stripped of her clothing, gave defendant a free hand to deal with his isolated victim. And just because defendant sexually assaulted CM during the confinement does not mean that the lengthy confinement could not sustain a separate charge of kidnapping. Second, evidence of interruption in the underlying crime has never been required under the statute. And as this case shows, it's not particularly sound or workable. Not only is it unclear what would have constituted an interruption, under the opinion, the state generally cannot charge an charge a defendant with kidnapping if he rapes the victim during the confinement, unless the defendant takes a break or someone or something interrupts the defendant. And even if an interruption is a part of the analysis, there's no possibility the defendant here was able to commit all of the acts for as long as he did without there being any breaks or interruptions in between the assaults. And finally, third, kidnapping by confinement and kidnapping by aspirations have always been separate scenarios under both the statute and case law. And for the panel to suggest that the outcome may have been different had the victim been moved off the porch is problematic, because under the confinement scenario of kidnapping, the victim does not need to be moved. The sheer fact that defendant was able to confine CM for hours on the porch reveals how isolated the porch was. And it is undeniable that the longer defendant confined CM on the porch, the more vulnerable she became. For all these reasons, the state respectfully asks this court to reverse the judgment of the appellate division and reinstate defendant's kidnapping conviction.
Ms. Dominguez, The appellate division, as you know, concluded from the record that this was a continuous act of sexual assault that extended over hours. Can you point to the record to demonstrate why that conclusion was wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. So here we have the victim's testimony that she was initially struck in the face, and that's when the confinement began. Then she testified, and again, the standard of review here is all favorable. The state receives all the benefit of all favorable testimony. She testified that she was then, he kneeled on her arms and stole $40 from her. And then he forced her onto her knees to perform oral sex. And then we know that she testified that then she was repeatedly penetrated vaginally and anally, and then ultimately the defendant instructed his friend to, if he wanted to penetrate her, to do so as well. And at that point, she was then penetrated by both defendants. And it's been recognized here, it's been recognized by courts that sexual acts, even if they occur within the same continuing criminal episode, they can amount to be separate and distinct indignities. And here we have the victim testifying to being anally penetrated, vaginally penetrated, and forced to perform oral sex repeatedly. And to suggest that this was 1 4-to-5-hour continuous sexual assault is not supported by facts, that she testified to various sexual acts being inflicted upon her.
Even if it was continuous, like, why wouldn't that constitute substantial confinement under the statute? Why should there be an irrational distinction if there's some sort of like separation in time of like a minute? You have a kidnapping, but if it's 10 hours of continual assaults, sexual acts, and the like, then it somehow doesn't fit within the kidnapping statute under the confinement piece.
Yes, Your Honor, I completely agree, and that's why this addition, that there had there been an interruption in the underlying crime, that would have resulted in a different outcome, it leads to absurd results, and is problematic. And we would suggest the better analysis is really looking, as this court has held in LaFrance and Messina, whether her risk of harm was enhanced by the confinement, whether the confinement exceeded that which was necessary to commit any of the underlying crimes here. And in this case, it absolutely did. If defendant, looking at defendant's own words, the victim testified, defendant said, when she attempted to leave the porch, "You're not going anywhere, you're going to pay for the money her friend had taken," if he intended to rob her, if he intended to force her to perform the sexual act that they had discussed before the confinement began. This confinement of her lasting for hours far exceeds that which was necessary to commit a robbery, to commit one sexual assault. Here we have the victim being confined for hours and subjected to significant harm that continued to increase as the night went on until she was able to escape.
However one looks at the record, this episode lasted a very long period of time. You've used 4.5 hours a couple of times in your argument. Is that the right length of time on the record for what you contend was confinement? Wasn't there a period of waiting around until the confinement begins?
Yes, there was. So we know from the testimony that the victim came to the porch probably around 2 o'clock. She testified that she purchased food from a fast food restaurant that closed at 2. So it was right before 2 o'clock where she got to the porch. And then we know from her own testimony that the friend left 2 times, the first time for about 10 minutes, and the second time the victim attempted to leave after waiting for 30 minutes. So we know that there was a period of time where she was on the porch willingly without being confined, that the confinement likely began around 2:30 to 2:40. And then we know that her friend testified that she saw the victim in the state that she was in when it was after it became light out. And we know the officers testified that they were dispatched to the scene at around 6:30, which is how we how we estimated the 4 to 5 hours. But I do acknowledge, as the defendant notes, that the lead detective's report has the incident occurring at 5:30, or ending at 5:30, I should say. So it is possible that that this assault was 3 hours. These are estimates based on what we have in the record. But even if the confinement lasted 3 hours, we would still be making the same arguments. It's still a confinement for a substantial period of time. And then going on to the third point I had, which was that the outcome may have been different had she been moved. There are two separate kidnapping scenarios. And they don't require evidence of the other in order to sustain the charge or to warrant the charge. To suggest that it may have been different had she been moved doesn't consider the fact that unlawful confinement on its own sustains a kidnapping charge. That is a separate scenario. And again, I would suggest that the facts here, the victim's own testimony here, suggests that this was an isolated location. We know that it happened on a porch of an abandoned house, that this occurred between the hours of 2 to 6 a.m. So that all supports the fact that this was an isolated location and the victim did not need to be moved. Again, a confinement is restraining the person, a person to where they are found. So removal is not necessary for a unlawful confinement kidnapping.
Tell us what factors in your judgment are distinct from forcible sexual assault in this case?
In this case, we know that she was initially struck in the face and that she did have she was bleeding profusely from the face. An officer testified that she was bleeding so profusely it was actually dripping from her face onto her neck, and she had the force of that hit pushed her onto a wall and she had a cut in the back of her head. So we do already know that she has pretty extensive potential injuries. She's bleeding profusely, she has a cut to her head, and then she's confined and prevented from seeking medical attention for those injuries. And then we know she testified to, although defendant was ultimately acquitted of the robbery, she testified to the defendant kneeling on her arms and taking $40 from her. And then we know that she then said the sexual assaults began, that she was initially forced to perform oral sex on defendant, and then she was vaginally and anally penetrated repeatedly, and that she described it as being a cycle in between the three penetrations. And then we know that the defendant instructed his friend to, if he wanted to penetrate her as well, to do so, which he did, and that resulted in her being anally penetrated by the co-defendant while forced to perform oral sex. So we know that she suffered separate and distinct indignities. She suffered repeatedly anal penetrations, vaginal penetrations, and oral penetrations. And then we know that the defendant threatened her at one point, saying that he would come back. He would become her pimp and come back for her every night, and that's what she testified to. And the fear that caused, she testified to the fear that hearing those words caused her. So we know here that there were a number of different separate harms inflicted on the victim. And to suggest that the only harm that this victim faced was continued sexual abuse does not properly consider the facts that she was repeatedly penetrated. And those are all, as the courts have acknowledged.
Why isn't that just an inherent part, I don't mean just, but an inherent part of his sexual assault against her? I don't understand why the kidnapping comes in here. I think we looked at this in Berry and the Berry factors, and if it's not an inherent part of the sexual assault, kidnapping is kind of redundant here. I mean, and I don't see kidnapping here, I see a pretty violent sexual assault for which he has been charged, and rightfully so. But the kidnapping is a bit of a stretch from where I sit.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree. Kidnapping, for confinement to be for a substantial period and then to warrant a separate kidnapping charge, this court in LaFrance said you have to look to see whether there's an enhanced risk of harm separate from the underlying crime. And here we know that she was she faced repeated sexual assaults. And that there's a harm in every penetration that she faced. There's an absolute risk that increased, and a separate risk that results in being forced to perform anal intercourse, being forced into vaginal intercourse, repeated oral sex. There's her harm absolutely increased beyond that which was necessary to commit one sexual assault.
Counsel, does the state rely at all on the fact that he cut off her dress during this assault, and not at the beginning of it, but later during the event? Does that factor into the analysis that you believe we should engage in?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor, because, of course, removing a victim's clothing for any purpose renders that victim vulnerable, more vulnerable than they were, you know, before. And that's absolutely part of the analysis here. And even though the appellate division stated that we did not argue that there was an independent purpose absent to for the commission of the sexual assault in removing her clothing, that simply doesn't take into account that removing a victim's clothing for any purpose absolutely increases their vulnerability and the potential for harm. It makes it harder for them to escape, and allows for additional harm to be inflicted on the victim.
At what point in time was the dress cut off? Do you know?
We don't know exactly when it was cut off, but she did testify that he used the knife that she testified he held against her neck in order to cut her dress. And we do also know that during the trial, an officer testified that the dress was in fact cut along the length of the dress. But we don't know exactly when, based on the testimony, when that occurred, when the dress was ripped.
But wasn't the removal of the dress or the cutting of the dress to facilitate the sexual assault?
It can be part of facilitating the sexual assault, but it absolutely should be considered in the kidnapping analysis. When you're considering whether the victim faced an increased risk of harm during the confinement,
wouldn't it also inhibit her ability to run, to get away?
Yeah.
Should that be considered also?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Completely agree with that. So not only does it facilitate the commission of the underlying sexual assaults, but it makes her more vulnerable because she's unlikely to escape, being without clothing. So it absolutely should still be a factor in the kidnapping analysis.
Is there anything you'd like to add?
So the three main points would be that here it's our position that this confinement was not merely incidental to the underlying sexual assault, particularly in light of everything that the victim testified to, and that needs to be considered, even though that she was even in her testimony should be considered as to all the separate sexual acts that she endured during this time. And we disagree with the appellate division's characterization of this being one single continuous sexual assault. It's not supported by the facts, and it doesn't take into account the separate harm that exists when you are forced into performing different sexual acts. and that we would disagree with the analysis that there needed to be an interruption in the underlying assault in order to warrant a kidnapping charge. It's not clear what would constitute an interruption, and it potentially leads, as Your Honor recognized, to potentially absurd results. And then lastly, that the fact that she wasn't removed should not prevent the state from being able to charge a kidnapping in this case, because it was a kidnapping based on the unlawful confinement. And then we would just ask the court to, again, respectfully ask the court to reverse the decision of the appellate division and reinstate defendant's kidnapping conviction.
Thank you, Ms. Dominguez. Ms. Bloom.
Thank you.
You need to unmute yourself, Ms. Bloom.
I would have to ask the court to look at what the appellate division said, because I think they summarized the facts accurately when they said this was a single course of uninterrupted criminal conduct. The criminal conduct may have taken on both Chapter 12 and Chapter 14 assault, but there was no delineated break or stop between this course of conduct. The critical assessment for kidnapping is whether the defendant was holding the victim for any reason other than to commit the underlying offense. And there was no point at which she wasn't held, forced, or threatened except to commit the underlying offense. The offenses here were horrible. This was a nightmare. But that doesn't alter the fact that what he did was assault her, not kill her. There was no time when she was being held that she wasn't also being either physically assaulted or sexually assaulted.
So can I stop you there, Ms. Bloom, for 1 second? I'm looking at the statute, which seems to say precisely the opposite of what you just said. I'm looking at 13.1. Mm-hmm. And it says, if he unlawfully confines another for a substantial period with the following purpose, one of them is to commit a sexual assault. That's a kidnapping. It doesn't have to be for another person. Purpose. The purpose here of the confinement was to commit a sexual assault. Mm-hmm. Why does there have to be something else in the mix?
I'm not arguing something else. I'm saying that the statute would overrun all of the substantive offenses if it is interpreted literally. Excuse me, and it never has. The court has interpreted it in order to narrow it so that kidnapping doesn't subsume the underlying substantive offenses. And the way it has always been interpreted, so that you avoid that, if you don't mind, absurd overreading of it, is that there has to be a holding for some reason other than to facilitate the underlying offense.
Tell me if I'm mistaken. The reason why this court has used the enhanced risk of harm or incidental to is when the period of the crime is very short, is a very small period of time. The court has never dealt with a continuous commission of crimes over a 5-hour period or a 3-hour period and not considered that to be a substantial period, or at least a substantial period so that it would go to the jury for its decision. Am I off about that?
I agree with you, Otter, that there has never been a finite amount of time that has been applied in order to determine whether the confinement was substantial. But and it is necessary for somebody to hold the victim for a substantial period of time to even make the threshold of kidnapping. But that's not sufficient to determine kidnapping. What you also need is to show that it was something over and above the holding the confinement in order to commit the underlying offense. And there is no delineated break here at which time the victim was being held for any reason other than the continuing series of assaults.
So you're telling us that if someone continuously assaults a person over a period of 10 hours, nonstop, no break, no interruption, that's not going to be a substantial period for purposes of 13-1?
I'm agreeing with Your Honor that the words substantial, period, or satisfied, I'm saying that's necessary to even get it to the kidnapping threshold, but it's not sufficient. You need this additional factor of whether they were being held for some reason other than to commit.
Where is that in the statute? I'm looking for that. Where is that? Show me.
Your Honor, it is not spelled out in the statute. It is the way the court has been construing it so that the kidnapping offense doesn't overrun all of the other offenses. You could, if you're going to draw some line at some point, every robbery essentially, it requires a confinement. Every rape requires a confinement. I suggest every homicide requires a confinement. So the court has always looked for some confinement beyond what was necessary to get the underlying offense, and that's what's missing here. I would also disagree with what's been said earlier about the isolation. The defendant never isolated the victim. He confined her on a porch that was in public view. Whether she had clothing on or she didn't have clothing on, she was in public view from the moment she went on the porch. One who said she saw, Miss M is the one who said she saw her friend and two other men on the porch, and then she summoned help from her own friend who passed by a few hours later and helped her to escape. She was in public view the whole time. The street was known for prostitution trafficking. She told us that there was a little bodega next door that was open the whole time. It was immediately next door. She was in public view. This was not isolated. And it has nothing to do with whether she was moved. The only reason the appellate division referred to moving was that they hypothesized that if he had moved her into the house, then she would have been out of public view. She was isolated. But this offense was committed from start to finish in public view. The other aspect that I wanted to emphasize is that there was no delineated break, that this was a continuing course of offense. There was nothing separate about this that converted it from the holding her to commit the assault into kidnapping. We have always looked at kidnapping as something over and above the underlying offense, and there was no point at which the threat of force or the actual force that was being applied against her wasn't in service of committing one of these horrible offenses. And
The jury was asked that specific question, whether it was inherent in the underlying offense or separate apart from. Held at knife point, assaulted physically, not sexually specifically, but physically assaulted and sexually assaulted over a long period of time. And the jury was asked that specific question and charged on it correctly. Not inherent in the separate offense, where the confinement created a significant danger to the victim independent of that posed by the separate offense. And they heard all the evidence, the knife, the punching in the face, the ripping her dress, cutting her dress off with the knife, the repeated sexual assaults, the 2.5 to 4 hours. They heard all that and decided, yeah, that was separate and in addition to and independent of the sexual assault. Now you want us to overturn that finding by the jury after all the evidence that they heard. Isn't that wrong? It's never been done before in a kidnapping case.
Technically, Your Honor, this is really an appeal from the denial of the motion for judgment of acquittal at the point that the state rested. So that's what we're really appealing, that the court, as the gatekeeper, was supposed to apply the meaning of kidnapping to see if there was something over and above the force used to hold her, whether it would survive getting to the jury. So, yes,
But the appellate division decided that issue based upon no separation, no break, no removal. The things that I'm suggesting to you aren't consistent with what the evidence was, what the jury considered, and what the jury decided.
Well, it is not inconsistent with the evidence I would respectfully disagree with respect to a break, because the state gets the inference from its witness and everything she said. She is essentially the only one who told us what went on. And she explained that this was a continuous offense. There was no time when she stopped. There was a break. He held me,
so
but
you,
he didn't assault
so you,
me.
So when Justice Albin said, somebody in this position punched at knife point, cut off her dress, and repeatedly sexually assaulted by two people for, what, 5 hours, 6 hours,
a 10 lengthy
hours,
period of
24
lengthy.
Hours? Pardon me?
A lengthy that period of time. Okay.
Well, this was about as long, I mean, this court's found a half an hour is long enough. We know it was a lot longer than that. We know it was at least two and a half, may have been five.
The duration,
five's a long time.
I'm sorry. The duration itself is not, I'm sorry, Ron, I thought you were done.
No, I am done, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. The duration itself is not dispositive. What has always been key is whether the holding was for something over and above the actual commission of the underlying offense. That's kidnapping is triggered. Kidnapping isn't the holding.
That's not what the statute says.
But that's how it's always been construed, because otherwise it would subsume the underlying offenses. I don't disagree with
that. Isn't that why the jury's asked that question? The jury specifically asked, in light of all the evidence, was the confinement a separate thing? And there's a lot of evidence that a lot of stuff was going on besides the sexual assault for a pretty long period of time. And the jury said, yeah. And the appellate division said, notwithstanding what that evidence was, there was another one put to the jury, notwithstanding what that evidence was, you need a break in time of God knows what length, maybe it was a minute, five, half an hour. You need a break in time, or you need a removal, you need conditions that the statute doesn't provide for, and that no case law says you have to have.
There's no case law that talks about a break. What the case law talks about is, were you holding the person for anything other than the commission of the underlying offenses? And based on Ms. M's own testimony, this was just a continuous series of assaults. Initially, it took on a non-sexual assault. He punched her. But then, without delay, he went into the sexual assault. There was no time when she was being held that she wasn't being assaulted.
Where is this other than language? Where is this other than language that you keep on referring to?
Your Honor, I agree that it is not literally verbatim in the statute. It's the way this court and other courts have been construed.
Where have we ever said using other than for the purpose of committing the offense? Where is that?
That there has to be an enhanced harm beyond...
That's different. An enhanced harm is different. Raping someone for 5 hours, a jury might decide that's an enhanced harm. Punching the person in the face, permitting someone to anally penetrate, that could be an enhanced... That's different from other than the actual offense.
The severity of the assaults is, under the code, determines the degree of the offense. The severity of the assaults does not convert a sexual assault into a kidnapping. What I think the state is looking for is when it gets really bad, because it goes on for a while, somehow that converts what is sexual assault, a long time ongoing sexual assault, into a kidnapping. There is no
Ms.
point.
Blum, how would your interpretation of statute work? Forget sexual assault and the carjacking for robbery, and the person's taken in the car, but it's all part of it. Could there be kidnapping there? Not under your theory. Because the carjacking was for the purpose of the crime of stealing the car and whatever the person had in them. So, but they went across state lines, or they went to North Jersey and they held the person in the car for a whole period of time. Under your theory, you could never have kidnapping there because the intent was to carjack and steal the money.
Crossing state lines, maybe that might...
Well, no, forget the state lines. I went too far. Okay. Just stay in New Jersey. We're quarantined, so let's stay in New Jersey.
Okay. I hadn't considered it, but on the principle that if the victim was being held only for the purpose of the carjacking, then I'm not sure I see how you can convert a carjacking into a kidnapping. If I may, I would also want to talk
even though they're held in the car for hours while they're driving to North Jersey, eluding the police, it still would be a kidnapping under your interpretation.
If it was entirely for the purpose of the carjacking. This was entirely for the purpose of committing the assault. Then there was nothing that converted this into a kidnapping. What the court has said, and this is maybe going back to what Mrs. Alden was saying, the assault, the only way the court has been finding kidnapping is if there was an additional harm beyond the actual assault. There were robbery cases where they said holding the person in the house or even tying up the person during the course of the robbery, which obviously is a confinement, is not what converted the robbery into a kidnapping. It was leaving people afterwards, remaining confined after the robbery was over and the thief left. Or confining, in one case, I think it was LaFrance, where the victim was both robbed and raped. It wasn't that both offenses were committed against the victim that converted it into a kidnapping. It was that the victim's husband was tied up that forced him to be further isolated. So there was always something more than the underlying holding for the commission of the offense. It is true that I can't think of a case that the absolute duration was necessarily as long as this case, but the duration itself has never been the reason to convert what is a substantive criminal offense into a kidnapping. If I may, I would also want to point to the holding of the knife. That may sound like it doesn't help me, but I would like to point out that the victim's own testimony, she said, I stayed there because he put a knife on me. The holding with the knife was for the point of forcing her to submit to the offense. The dress is really a red herring.
Wasn't it also to force her to stay there, not just to commit the sexual assault? The point of the knife was so she wouldn't leave before the assault began.
So actually,
Maybe I read them wrong.
Well, I'm going to answer. The facts are, if you look at page 128 of the July 28, 2016 transcript, that's where the victim's testimony starts talking about the details of the offense. And she says on line 8, the prosecutor asks her, you were forced to perform sexual acts. And her answer is, and I quote, he had a knife to me. And it goes on like that. She says, when did he take out the knife? And the victim says, after I start moving around, and this first she says, I was on my knees to perform the initial act of oral sex. And then she says, after I start moving around and trying to get away, I kept saying, no, I don't want to do this. And that's when the knife came out.
Doesn't that support what I just asked you? The knife was used to prevent her from running away, not to facilitate the sexual act, but to prevent her from running away.
I think it's the opposite.
I read exactly the same thing you read, but my take on it is very different from yours.
Well, the victim says she tried to resist submitting to the sexual act, but he brought out a knife, so I submitted.
That's not what you read. That's your interpretation.
I was moving around and trying to get away, but you have to read before that, she says, I was on my knees. Immediately before that, she says, I was on my knees in order to commence giving him oral sex. I'm sorry to have to indulge in this. I'm uncomfortable discussing it, but it's essential for explaining the offense. She says that's how the sexual episode started. The defendant made her get on her knees in front of him to commit the oral sex. And she said, and in fact, the prosecutor described it as you tried to wriggle away. And her answer was, he held a knife to me. That's why I stayed. It's almost impossible to distinguish between holding the knife on her to make her commit the sexual offense and holding her there
Doesn't the state get the benefit of that, every doubt on that testimony? Doesn't the state get the benefit?
I don't see any doubt that he was holding her but to commit the sexual offense. There was no point. He didn't hold her for a moment beyond the commission of the assaults. He didn't, there was no delineated point where he said, where she described an ongoing offense. I'm using the word uninterrupted.
Ma'am, we respectfully disagree. Maybe somebody asks us another question. We respectfully disagree on the reading of the transcript.
Okay, if I may just return to the idea that she was isolated. She was in public view the whole time. She described herself as having seen what was going on the porch, which is why she joined them. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning, so there was enough light for her to see things at that hour. And she didn't just see shadows, she saw her friend and two men. And then her own friend saw her later and made her out, could see she was in distress and asking for assistance. You're not isolated when people see you as they pass by. So
why should that make a difference? If someone is tied to a pole in their backyard and neighbors can see the person and the person is held there for a period of 24 hours, are you going to say that that person is not kidnapped? That doesn't constitute a substantial period? Why would that make a difference?
There's a difference between substantial period and isolation. The court has told us that isolation increases the risk of harm. My point is, there was no isolation, and thus the risk of harm was not increased if she was in public the whole time. If you're out of public, the defendant may be able to inflict greater harm on her. In this instance, she didn't leave because of the knife, but the isolation was not increased. Taking off her dress really was not the reason that she stayed. She made that clear. She was already being held with the knife, and the knife was brought out only for the purpose of holding her.
I don't think it's going to really make a big difference to the victim if she's raped for 5 hours on a porch at dusk or when it's dark or in a room. Maybe she's more isolated in the room, but in terms of the nature of the offenses, that doesn't seem to be a big distinguishing point.
And the defendant would be guilty of sexual assault and be convicted of sexual assault. It's just that the additional crime of kidnapping was not made out under those circumstances. And the court has yet to say that the absolute duration converts what is a sexual assault into a kidnapping. These are unusual facts, but they're not facts that definition of the term of kidnapping. The holding, the detention, was indivisible from the underlying substantive offenses. There was nothing that added to what went on that made it, that converted what was a prolonged sexual offense, a prolonged nasty sexual offense, into a kidnapping. Unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bloom. Mr. Mingus, did you want to offer rebuttal? You need to unmute yourself.
Sorry,
please,
I apologize.
Unmute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that. Just very briefly, Your Honor, 3 quick points. I failed to mention that the length of time is absolutely still a factor. While it's not the sole determinative factor, it should be considered, and it still is, as this court acknowledged in LaFrance, that you consider not only the duration, but the enhanced risk of harm. So, and we would suggest that the appellate division here did not properly consider how long this confinement was, and the importance and weight of that. Second, again, just reiterating that it's never been part of the case law for kidnapping that there need to be a delineated break and interruption. And again, as I argued earlier, it leads to potentially absurd results. And it's not clear what would even constitute a break when that would be met. And even based on these facts, we argue that it's impossible for this to have happened as the victim testified it did, for as long as it did, without there having been any breaks. If nothing else, from moving from physically assaulting her to then starting to sexually assault her and engage in all of those sexual acts that he inflicted on her. And then lastly, the testimony as to the knife. A knife is not necessary in order to commit a sexual assault. So to suggest that the knife was solely taken out to sexually assault the victim is just, it's not supported by the, by what the victim testified to, and you don't need a knife in order to sexually assault. That's an additional thing, and that absolutely can bind her to the porch, and it's separate from the sexual assault. That's a separate harm in and of itself. And then just, we would ask again that the court, respectfully ask the court to reverse the decision of the appellate division and reinstate defendant's kidnapping conviction.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take